Hey everyone, it's Friday, August 28th, 2020. Welcome to episode 26 of the Ginger and the Beard podcast. I'm AJ, aka the Ginger.
And I'm Reese, aka the Beard.
And on this week's show, we're so excited to have our first guests on the podcast, Victor and Andrew from Lion Bynes Hop Farm. They'll be joining us for our What You Drinking segment to school us on some hops, talk about the start of their farm, and hang out with us while we talk about the UFC.
Oh, so exciting. We'll also be talking about Elon Musk's Neuralink update, given just a few hours ago, I guess, about 5 hours ago, and much more. So stick around. All right, let's do this.
Oh boy, we've got an exciting show this week, man. Oh, I'm dude. Super excited.
Me too. Super yeah, exciting.
As we mentioned at the top of the show, we've got some special guests, our very first special guests in the Ginger and the Beard podcast. Couldn't be more excited to have these guys from Lion Bynes Hop Farm joining us for the What You Drinking segment. But before we dive into that, how was your week, man?
My week was good, I think. I don't remember much of it. It was busy. I was very tired. I just remember being very tired this whole week. I took a lot of naps. I got a lot of rest. Got caught up on sleep, I think. You know, no real big events. You know, we tore up our second bathroom. Luckily, nothing crazy. Kind of straightforward. And it's actually almost put back together.
That's impressive.
Yeah. Shout out to my wife. She's done so much work on it. You know, she's really kind of put a thought in her head and just delivered. And I'm just there to help out, you know, with things. But she's the ringleader for sure. So
nice.
Thank you. And that's it, man. That's all I got. Boring.
How much HGTV have you been watching?
None.
What? Come on.
Nah. It's all YouTube stuff. It's all like, you know. It's all, I don't know, just YouTube every once in a while. And it's mostly actually Instagram stuff. You know how there's like all these Instagram, there's a lot of Instagram people that get into like DIY realm. And, you know, we're on our way to be just our own do-it-yourselfers like all the way. Cause we got a nail gun now, got a miter saw. We got all kinds of tools to get it done,
man.
At this point,
you should just start your own company.
I mean, a couple more tools and we might.
Nice.
How about you?
Well, number one, I'm just glad you guys have some positive vibes in your house. That's what I like to hear.
Me too.
But man, my week was pretty good. It was just, it's just so stressful at work right now. So much going on. I couldn't even, like, it would take me an entire hour to even explain it all. But I'm excited to be sitting right here and talking to you and about to have a great podcast episode and then play some video games after that. About to drink some delicious beer that I can't wait to tell you guys about. So stick around for that for sure. Only really one negative this week. I completely destroyed my knee. Not destroyed. That's an exaggeration. Skateboarding. So number one, I turned 30 next week. So I feel like I'm at my peak of like physical condition. And I'm just teetering on the line of like deterioration. So I probably shouldn't be on a skateboard to begin with, but that's how I kind of break up my day when I'm sitting at this desk for, you know, 8 hours. And I'm like, I just need to get out of the house for a minute.
Right.
I hop on my little cruiser board and I go cruise around the neighborhood. But I was on this one street and I only had like 10 minutes before I had to get back to my next meeting. So I was like, really, I was hauling, dude. I was going quick. And, I was just pushing super hard and I just lost my balance and just ate it. Just went face forward into the road.
Oh, geez.
Fortunately, there was no cars coming the opposite way because I probably would have been smashed, but I just kind of landed on my knee and just kind of did a cool little roll. I felt cool at least. I'm not sure how it looked. But my AirPods that were in my ears stayed in. My sunglasses stayed on.
Shout out AirPods.
Yeah, I was wearing a different t-shirt. It was like one of my favorite t-shirts. So I popped up immediately and I was like, the first thought that hit my head was, oh man, I hope I didn't tear this shirt. Shirt was good. Pulled my phone out of my pocket.
Not concussion. Oh, the shirt.
Yeah. phone screen was not cracked. I'm like, all right, solid. So then I looked behind me. My skateboard's still going down the road, same direction. So I just kind of just rolled and got up super quick and just took off running after my skateboard, hopped back on and kept going. And I looked down at my knee and I was like, oh, that doesn't look good. And it's all scraped up and nasty.
Oh, man, that sucks.
And then I got back just in time for my next meeting. So I didn't have any time to, like, clean it up. And then I had, like, two meetings back-to-back after that. So Shana gets home later, and she's like, I can't believe you didn't clean this up after it happened. I'm like, I legit had no time to do that. So whatever road dirt or rocks or whatever that were in there, they just stayed in there for a few hours.
Wow.
So now it's a little sore now. I'm hoping it doesn't get infected.
Jeez, dude. But, like, okay, so, like, was it a lot of... I don't want to get into the gory details of it, but it was pretty, it sounds like it was pretty bad, man. That sucks.
I mean, it wasn't like super bloody or anything. Not that nasty, but
yeah, but
at almost 30 years old, it was kind of funny.
Yeah.
So, never grow up. Hashtag never grow up. That's your lesson for the day, kids.
Nobody was recording it. We couldn't get a fail video.
I wish it probably looked so good.
Well, I'm happy that it didn't cause any real injuries, you know, and you were able to ride back, so that's good. But yep. Still, that sucks, man. That sucks so bad.
Oh, it geez. Made me feel alive. I felt so alive.
Yeah, battle scars.
That's right, man.
All right, man. That's really unfortunate. I'm happy that the rest of your week wasn't so bad. You know, hopefully, you know, there's not as much stress in the future. You know, the future yep. weeks to come. But, you know, before we move on, I just wanted to remind everybody here to follow our show on Twitch, like and subscribe on YouTube. Also subscribe on your favorite podcast player. And if you really want to help us out, tell a friend, tell some family. As always, we appreciate you guys. We love you being here. We like what we're doing, and we hope you do too.
Yes, absolutely. And I hope you guys will tell your friends about this episode for sure, because the time has come to welcome our first ever guest on the podcast. We're going to transition into our What You Drinking segment right now, but we couldn't be more excited to talk to the guys from Lion Binds Hop Farm.
Be right back. And we're back. Welcome to the What You Drinking segment. And welcome to our guests, Victor and Andrew from Lion Binds Hop Farm.
How's thanks it going, guys?
Thanks for having us, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, we're so excited, man. I think when you guys reached out to us to be on, I was like, dude, this is exactly what we need. We need to learn more. We're trying to learn more about beer and educate the people. And now we finally got some experts to do just that for us. So thank you guys for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
So awesome. Really quick, just before we get started with our beers of the week, but do you guys want to go ahead and just introduce yourselves?
Yeah, so we have a hop farm in central Pennsylvania. It's in Mechanicsburg, which is close to Harrisburg and Hershey. We service our local craft beer scene. And we also, you know, service anywhere in the Northeast that is interested in Northeastern hops. Andrew and I, as well as a couple other people, started the farm in 2018, and you know, we're building this thing as we go.
Could you maybe tell us your name and also tell us what you do for Lion Binds?
So I'm Victor, and I run our sales and marketing. So I run our Instagram, our website, and I do a lot of the outreach to breweries as well as fulfilling orders with them.
Okay.
And I'm Andrew. I'm our farmer. So I spend all of my extra time on the farm. I'm the one who grows the plants, processes them. And Victor likes to come to town and help out sometimes for some of the fun chores. But
yeah, oh, man.
He plays a huge role. He really does.
That's awesome. How long have you guys known each other?
We're
20 years.
Nice.
Yeah. We started first grade together.
Wow.
Yeah, we're probably 20 plus years, really.
Yeah. Way back.
Man. That's awesome. Cool. That's awesome. So have you guys always kind of had this, this kind of passion for farming or for beer, or, you know, what kind of, what, I guess I'm jumping right in. What kind of, brought this all about, I guess?
I think it's funny because it's definitely the beer side of it. It wasn't like, you know what? I love to farm. I grew up loving farming. Neither of us, I'd never really, you know, I did yard work. That's about it. But in our area, you know, we grew up drinking Trogues, and, you know, there's so many different things that, so many different breweries that we drank from. So it was like, you have to love craft beer where we're from. And at one point, Andrew actually gave me a call. I'm a CPA, and he said, "Hey, I'm thinking of starting a hop farm with some friends. I have this plot of land I'd like to grow it on, and I need some advice on this business plan." And I read the business plan, and I was like, "All right, well, I want in on this." And, you know, we kind of went from there.
That's awesome.
Nice.
The rest is history.
And this yep. is where we are today. we do have a couple beers that we're going to be talking about today before we really dive into, the life that you guys have at Lion Vine's Hop Farm. So, AJ, do you want to go ahead and you know, tell us a little bit about what happened on Instagram and get us into this first,
beer? Yeah, absolutely. So every week, give a shout out there to the voters. Thank you guys on Instagram for voting for the polls this week. For mine, I had two different beers up. High Wire Brewing out of Asheville. It's called High Wire Loves Asheville. And it was up against an Aleworks Eagle Air Guitar. So I got the screenshot here. Let's see if I can get that to focus in. There we go. And as you can see, it was a landslide victory, 78-22%. So I thought I knew what I was drinking this week. But then I got a special message, a special early surprise. It is my birthday's actually next week, so I consider this an early birthday gift. Our good friends at Farmhouse Brewing here in Virginia Beach, I just happened to be wearing this Farmhouse Brewing t-shirt today. This is definitely not, it's a giant coincidence. We got a little bit of an early access to a beer that's releasing tomorrow. It's called the Ric Flair's Strawberry Ice Goza. So my kids and my wife are sleeping right now, so I'm not going to do the Ric Flair woo, but because I might get in trouble for that. But I'm so excited. I could not be more excited about this beer. They were supposed to release this about 3 weeks ago, and then they said some technical difficulties came about. Not exactly sure what that was, but they had to push back the release. So I'm going to go ahead and crack this bad boy open. I'm honestly excited to see what this looks like based on the label here and the description. And I'm honestly a little bit disappointed that I couldn't just ship one of these to you, Reese, like not even overnight, just like within a couple of hours, since you are the Goza man. I'm definitely a noob when it comes to the Gozas, but let's see what we got here.
I trust you. Looks nice. It's got a pinkish hue to it.
Yeah, that's actually the color in our official Ginger and the Beard beer glass here. That's actually the color I was kind of expecting. It's kind of like a pale pinkish. Strong strawberry flavor there. I'm not sure where the ice comes from in the name. I'm curious about that, but very large head on this for sure. So a little bit of facts about this. This is a fruited sour ale. It's brewed with strawberry puree. It's actually really low ABV, only 3.5%. I was actually kind of shocked when I saw that because most of the beers coming out of Farmhouse these days are pretty high in content. My favorite IPA they produced so far is the Mosaic, which is 11%. So it's a hefty boy. But this is actually brewed in collaboration with Aloha Snacks, which is a local restaurant that serves like a myriad of different foods with a lot of Asian inspired dishes and sushi and ramen and stuff like that. So I was really excited because I'm a big fan of theirs as well. Nice. I'm going to go ahead and give this a try. That's delicious. Very creamy mouthfeel, I would say. The flavor is very strong strawberry, which I'm very happy about. I like get very disappointed when I have a beer that's supposed to taste like a fruit and you can barely taste it. So this one's is very satisfying. It's like I said, brewed with the strawberry puree. I couldn't find a ton of information about this out there just yet since it's so new. But just depending on, it seems like after I did some research for fruited sours, and depending on when the fruit's added in the brewing process, it can do different things with the flavor profile. And just based on what I'm tasting and based on what I've researched, it seems like that's added pretty late in the process, like in the aging process, which is when the fruit flavor really comes out strong. So that's really, really delicious. I recommend you guys check that out for sure. I'm even seeing some bits of fruit in the glass right now. I'm sure you can't see it on the camera, but it's just kind of floating around in there. So, this is kind of this was their Aloha to Summer series. So basically waving goodbye to summer with this last fruity release. So definitely check that out if you're local to Hampton Roads. And thank you, Farmhouse, for the early access there.
Yeah, that's really cool. Ending the summer with a big old woo.
Yes,
I can't
nature
do it
boy.
loud either. I can't do it loud either, but
Lim limousine riding, jet flying, Rolex wearing.
oh
Oh
man,
man, back
take
in
it
the
there.
day.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, so I had two beers as well. I had the National Cherry Blossom Festive Ale, Farmhouse Cherry Ale. It's a cherry saison. I don't know if I'm saying that right. I think I'm saying it right. Saison, saison.
Close enough.
Yeah, close enough. And that was up against the Collective Arts Blood Orange and Hibiscus Sour. And apparently the Farmhouse Cherry Ale won. So we're going to go ahead and get into this. This is from Old Ox Brewery, which is actually really not that far from my house. It actually won 67% to 33%. So I actually am surprised about that because usually the more artistic cans win. And with a name like Collective Arts, it had a very cool looking can. But yeah, I guess Festive Ale won out anyway. So it's a farmhouse ale, saison style, 5.5% ABV, 7 IBUs. It's the official beer of the National Cherry Blossom Festival. So Old Ox and the National Cherry Blossom Festival chose a rustic farmhouse ale as a representation of the season. And it was originally, just so you guys know, it was originally brewed as a thirst quenching beverage for farmers planting crops, which I found pretty interesting that you would
Interesting.
be, you know, drinking beer to.
Drinking on the job.
Yeah, you know. It's also a sign that spring has arrived. So I guess kind of the opposite of what you were drinking, which is the end
Yeah.
of summer. Now
Right.
it's maybe I should have drank this a couple months ago.
Maybe.
Whoops. So let's go ahead. I'm going to go ahead and pour this guy out and see what we're working with here. And same ginger in the beard glass. Oh, don't spill on my keyboard.
Oh, we've made that mistake once already.
Yeah, I know. I don't want to do that again.
Look at that. Another pink beer.
Another
Two
pink
pink beers on the
beer.
show today. All right.
Definitely
Just represent.
not as hazy as what you got over there. Still a little hazy though. Definitely pink hue. Nice head on it. Pretty uniform bubbles. Let's go ahead and give it a try. That's pretty good. I guess I am getting a little bit of the cherry. It's a little bit sweet, not as sweet as I would have expected. Just a tiny, tiny bit of bitterness. Very easy to drink, I would say. Like refreshing, certainly, which is I think what I mean, that's what they were going for, right? And I could
Yeah.
see why they would choose this because I feel like I could drink this on a hot day. I could probably drink a couple of these on a hot day and I could definitely get some work done out in the yard, no problem. Very bubbly, silky kind of feel to it, I guess you could say. But overall, pretty happy with it. So
Very nice.
yeah, man, I would recommend
Sounds
this.
tasty. I don't think I've ever had a cherry beer, the more I think about it. I think that's one flavor I'm missing in my repertoire.
Have you had Mad Elf Trogues?
Yeah, I
No, I
have.
have not.
That's a cherry beer.
I
I haven't
bet
had that.
you've had cherry I bet there's been cherry in like some of the beers that you've drank and you probably didn't realize it.
You know, I realized the other day, I was like, I haven't been logging. I have Untappd and I used to use it, but I haven't logged like any beer since doing this podcast. And we've had a bunch since then. So
at least like 50, right? Yeah. Probably at least 50 beers since we've been doing this.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
So yeah, that was the festival. I liked it. I recommend it. Definitely guys, try Old Ox. They come up with some new and exciting things quite often. So moving on, Victor, did you have a beer you wanted to share with us?
Yes, I'm drinking the Long Island City Company Man. It's a Pilsner. A friend of mine gave it to me, so I really didn't know too much about it. but it's a German-style Pilsner brewed solely with Hellertau hops. So it's an old-world hop, typically. You know, those aren't as common. They're used in your Pilsners and your lagers. You know, you don't get that real like punch in the face. You don't get the citrus that you may think, or the pine. You just kind of get like a little bitterness with it. So it's nice. It's refreshing, very malt forward. And it's definitely like a lawnmower beer.
I love that description. That's awesome.
ABV is 5.5%. So you could drink a couple of these, and be good to go.
See, that's why I need a riding mower. I have the smallest yard in the world. Not really, but I have a pretty small yard. But I just to hold a beer on my lawnmower, that's what I need a riding mower for.
You can amazing. Put like a cup holder in your push mower.
Yeah,
there you go.
That's when you've reached ultimate dad status. Is when you like have a Corona with your lawnmower, or like my dad was a Coors Light man for a while.
Nice.
I have a koozie in my shower that.
Oh my god!
Stick on when you're showering using your soap or whatever, then you can take it off and stick it back on.
Yeah,
breakfast of champions.
Yeah.
Hey, so you said that it was a citrusy, or it was you said it was citrusy or not?
No.
Citrusy.
So it's the old world hops, like a Hellertau, doesn't have the citrus, doesn't have what maybe you would associate with hops. You know, being an American drinker, drinking American craft beer is very hop forward, punch you in the face. This is like just really light bitterness. You know, they highlight the malt a little more, and it's very subtle.
So I'm learning a little bit more about hops, but it's great to have you guys on. So is that because that they harvested it earlier on in the season, you think, or is it literally just because that's the type of strain that it was genetically modified to be?
It's all the strain. You know, if you harvest too early, you're not going to get the character you need out of the hop, because as the hop matures, you know, the lupulin powder is released, and that's what gets you all your flavoring and all of that. So without that, you really don't have much. This is just, you know, this is a very old hop, and it was bred to have these flavors. Just how, you know, other hops will be bred to, like citrus. It's got a lot of citrus character because they were bred, crossbred. Different hop varieties that had this character was bred with another one that has another character. And through a ton of trial and error, you get to these great hops.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, I didn't realize that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I'm excited to kind of transition and push us into more, to learn more about you guys and the farm. So I've definitely got a lot of questions about hops as well. But do you guys want to give us? I'm kind of interested in some more background on the farm. So you guys, how long's the farm been around, and how did you guys get into this?
So we started up. You know, the idea started in 2017, and it wasn't until 2018 that any plants were in the ground. And it kind of started, Andrew had an idea, you know, talking with a friend, and I'm a CPA. And so he asked me to review his business plan. And I said, you know, you can't afford my billing rate, jokingly. So you're going to have to, you know, let me in as a partner in the company. And then, you know, we started working on things. And before you know it, everything kind of took off, and we, you know, built a building to process our hops. We put 100 and however many poles in the ground and hundreds of plants. And it was, you know, kind of a whirlwind.
Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy. So what's the name Lion Binds stand? What is it? What's that represent?
Well, Andrew's last name is Lyons, and he's the farmer. This was his idea. So, you know, I wanted to pay homage to him because this is his baby. But I didn't want to call it like Lyons Family Brewing or Family Hop Farm, because I think it's a little more generic, and hops grow on vines. You know, okay. It's not a vine, a bind, which a lot of people say, wait, do you mean vine? But they do look like vines. They're similar to vines, but they're binds.
Vine with so, a B.
Yeah, with a B. So we went with Lion Binds. If you look at our logo, it's a hop, and it looks a bit like the form of a lion if you're looking closely.
Yeah,
it's very cool.
So that's where the name came from.
That's awesome. Yeah, so, I mean, as far as I know about hops, like just getting into hops in general, I think what I learned a long time ago about hops is where they came about was like preserving the beer as it was transported long distances. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that it originally came from beer that was being transported from India, and in order to preserve the beer while it was taking that journey across the ocean, hops are a natural preservative. So that's where it originated. So India Pale Ale, that's where that term comes from.
Yeah, that's like exactly what I thought. That the hoppier the beer, the longer the distance it had to travel, or something along those lines.
Pretty much, yeah.
But we've just started to, or especially, you know, the more IPAs that, number one, I used to hate IPAs. I used to think they were disgusting. But the longer I started drinking them, that's like what I prefer the most now. And every time we review an IPA on the show, of course, today we don't have an IPA, but I look at the hops that they are brewed with. And I just mentioned Mosaic from Farmhouse, the brewery that gave us this beer here. And Mosaic is a hop strand, I believe, that was brewed, or not brewed, bred over the course of, like, I want to, if I'm remembering correctly, it was like 12 years or something ridiculous. So how long does it take really to develop a sort of strand of hops that you're happy with? Or is it just an ever constantly evolving process?
So any time a new variety of hop is created, and that's typically by the bigger names that are out there, on average, it should take 10 years. And that's because, you know, if you're only growing those, that say you get something developed and now you have 10,000 seeds from the cross that you just did, and that's a low number. You have to grow all of those and kind of wean them out. And there's all sorts of parameters, whether it's growable, is, you know, does it have good aroma? Is it brewable? Is it harvestable? There's a whole bunch of different tests that it has to pass. Does it have disease resistance? And that takes years to test all those different things. And even so, you can have a hop that's perfect after 2 years, but you need to grow it for a few more years to make sure that its characteristics don't change. Because that's another factor. So it could turn into a completely different hop, or it just won't be good anymore. So you're supposed to spend years, although there have been out there that have come up with these varieties that they release in a couple of years and they have a ton of problems. So when you mention varieties like Mosaic or Citra, Amarillo, those are all patented trademark varieties that only the person that developed that variety, or someone that they allowed to grow it with them, they're the only ones allowed to touch it. So like, I can't grow Mosaic or Citra or any of those, because again, they're the ones that had to put in all that work and time to grow them.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So, you know, kind of going off of that, you know, what kind of hops are you all growing on the farm?
So we just recently made some changes. We're still kind of debating more, but right now in the ground, I have Cascade, which is the majority of our yard is Cascade. I have Zeus, I have Nugget, and we just put in a hop variety called Southern Cross, which is somewhat known. It's actually a New Zealand variety that was recently released, actually by accident. and we were able to through our supplier, get it. And it's something very different. Has one of the highest oil profiles of all the hops. So we're pretty excited to get it, grow it, and push it.
We also grow Chinook.
Oh, I miss
nice.
Chinook. That's
yeah,
my favorite hop.
I recognize a few of those names. Definitely Cascade. I wish I could remember some of the beers that I've had with some of these in them. I know
you've
that
probably had most of the beers. Most of the beers you've had have probably had Cascade or Chinook. A lot of those are the backbone hops.
Typically.
Okay. You know, the Mosaic, unless it's spelled out that it's brewed only with Mosaic or only with, you know, Citra, a lot of times the brewers will do the first boil with a Cascade, with a Chinook, you know, to get those flavors in there. And the more high-end hops, for lack of a better term, are aroma hops and, like, the flavor hops that come in at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, I know one that I've had. For some reason, I feel like a lot of the beers that I've been drinking recently are, you said New Zealand, but a lot of them have been advertised as like Australian hops. I don't know if that's very similar or.
Galaxy. If you've had anything with Galaxy.
Yeah, Galaxy.
One of the best hops in the world, in my opinion.
Yeah. I know one that I've really been enjoying lately is also, I think it's called Simcoe. It's like a nuttier sort of profile, I think, is what I usually pick up from it. And I actually was proud of myself the other day. I feel like I'm like painting myself as like a noob or something, but I was just drinking a beer. It was like an IPA or something. And I was like, this kind of tastes like it's got Simcoe like flavor profile in it. And I looked it up and it actually did have it in there. And I was so proud of myself.
Nice.
That's hard to do. I still, even that's hard for me sometimes. So.
That one just seems like it has a very unique profile compared to the more, I mean, maybe it's also because a lot of them that I drink are like the citrusy ones, definitely Citra, Mosaic, things like that.
Right.
And so that one, I was like, all right, this is definitely a little bit different. So, but kind of tailoring off of that, have you guys, you know, obviously there's a ton of time that has to go into this stuff, but you guys have been around for a few years now. Are you working on any sort of original hop varieties on your own?
Top secret.
I can say I play around with it. You know, again, and it takes 10 years. So I'll just say I love hops growing hops as much as I do. When in the wintertime, I grow hops in my basement.
Wow.
So that's kind of where I play around with that. So you have to get a hold of male hops. It's all the hops that you get in beer are from females. So I have some male hops and just play around with crossbreeding and see where that goes. So
is that the strategy then? Just taking multiple different strands, crossbreeding them and seeing what kind of happens?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it all comes down to basic biology and, you know, studying the pedigree of those varieties. You don't want them to be closely related. I actually have a pedigree chart that I go by, you know, when crossing them, because you want to make sure, like, the parentage isn't similar or your hops aren't going to be right because it's, you know, it's inbreeding. So
wow.
Same thing applies with plants, even, believe it or not. So that's... It's all something to play around with, and it may turn to nothing, but if anything, it's cool because I can end up with hop cones that don't exist anywhere else in the world, and they might suck, but it's something fun, you know, and that's just a little enjoyment I get out of it that annoys my wife, so.
That's so cool. So is like the fallback then basically, like what happens if you get a bad strand? Does it just not grow, or?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. You know, it might grow, but it could be highly susceptible to certain types of hop diseases, in which case is really a no-go because you put that into a yard and it gets diseased, well, it's going to spread it to the rest of your yard. You know, so when you're eliminating varieties that are, you know, your trials that aren't doing well, you literally kill them.
Oh, wow.
So if it doesn't pass a certain test, it goes away. And you move on to the next one. So,
okay.
And that's kind of how we select the hops for our yard as well. You
yeah.
know, we look at, because the Pacific Northwest, like Washington State, Oregon, they grow the majority of the hops in the world, and especially in the U.S. And with that, their climate's a little different than the East Coast. It's So we have to look at the hops that they grow and say, okay, does it make sense for our climate? We look at our climate. We look what grows well here, what doesn't. And so there are certain characteristics we look for and certain characteristics we avoid. And some of that's trial and error. You know, there's some, we've had to replace some hops because we're like, oh, you know, this might work, but it doesn't. But what we do is we'll do it in small increments, do two or three plants. And we have a little test yard. If those don't grow well, we're like, okay, scratch that. And so, you know, we're trying to make the most of the land we have. We're trying to make the most out of it. So if it doesn't grow well, we kind of move on.
So real quick, one more thing. If it does grow well, how do you, can you basically just go off of a sense of smell or taste of the plant itself to know if it's going to taste good in, you know, as a brew, basically?
Generally, yeah. You know, you can follow the basic characteristics that a hop is expected to have. Well, you know, like Cascade, which is, you know, your citrus, but it's more of a grapefruit citrus. You have Chinook that's got its classic pine characteristics and more grapefruit. Generally, the hops, no matter where you grow them, are going to contain those characteristics. But based on where you grow them, kind of like grapes, you get into the term called terroir. Which is a geographical influence or climate influence on like a vegetable or whether it be hops or grapes, whatever. So they're gonna be slightly different, but not really in a bad way. They'll just, my Cascade are gonna taste completely different than the Cascade grown up in the Yakima Valley. So, you know, that's where it's kind of interesting. But generally, you know, we're not getting any bad aromas or anything like that we've seen so far, unless it's a variety that's known to have some strange aromas.
Got it. Okay.
That's super cool. So how long does it take for an actual hop plant, or, you know, hopefully I'm using the correct terminology, to actually mature enough for you to tell? Like, I mean, obviously the year's only so long, and being here on the East Coast of the United States, maybe not the coast for you guys, but the weather is not as nice as other parts of the world all year round. So how much time do you really have each year to kind of grow? And then how many harvests can you even get out of a single year?
So for us, it's, you know, I can elaborate on that then, but it's one harvest every year. And hops are one of the fastest growing plants in the world. So, and as a plant that comes back every year, they'll break dormancy. Coming out of winter as early as February. I had shoots coming out in February this year. We had a really warm winter. And you don't want them to grow at that point. You don't want them to start growing until halfway, three quarters of the way through May. So I'll put it this way. You know, we'll cut them back until that point. And we'll say May 20th, we let them start growing and we train them. Say they grow 20 feet tall. So from May 20th, they'll be maybe 6 inches to a foot. And by the end of June, they'll be 20 feet tall.
What? So, oh my gosh, that's crazy.
So hops will grow a foot or more a day. I've had a couple that have grown almost 2 feet in a day.
That's mind-blowing.
Wow.
And that's just through maturity. I mean, this was their third year. And, you know, certain spots of the yard might get a little more nitrogen or have a little better soil. But I've actually measured. They do. You can almost watch them grow.
So, everybody's heard about like Monsanto, right, and everything that happened with that. And it sounds like from what you're saying is you might not have to replant. So, do you have to replant every year, or is it just you plant it once and then it just grows back every year?
Yep, and they get bigger and bigger. So when you plant them, they're a little plug in the ground about this big. And I can tell you that I just dug up some that were on their third year. And that little plug now weighs about 80 pounds worth of just roots. I can't even make my arms big around enough. I can tell you that about five of them took up the entire bed of a pickup truck. So they get huge and actually too big sometimes. You have to trim them back, but. Yeah, they're extremely vigorous growers. I mean, they're considered a weed, technically.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, and if you buy hops, like live hops online, they sell them by the gallon. Not by the plant, it's by the gallon because of the roots. So it's like, okay, I'm going to get gallons of this if you're going to buy an actual fully grown plant. And they're, you want to look up something interesting. Look how expensive mature hop plants are.
Man, that's crazy.
So, wow. So did you buy all mature hop plants, or did you start from, you started from seed and did it yourself, or from plug?
They're,
I guess
they're all baby plants from an actual hop plant supply company, and they're first year plants that they just get from cuttings that they propagate from that variety. So yeah, they're first year little baby plants, and you put them in the spring or even the fall, late summer, like we just did. And then they'll just keep growing and develop, and you'll lose some. You always have to replace some, and that's typical. We had a warm winter, and some hops require dormancy, so they don't get a proper dormancy. You might get some that die off.
Right. Got it. And you kind of touched on this earlier too, that different strains and things are more resistant to disease. What are some of the like unexpected challenges, or even expected challenges? You kind of already touched on that you have to be prepared for when you're growing hops.
So, yeah, I mean, it's different, and it's unique to every region or wherever you are in the world growing hops, just based on what kind of pests and what kind of disease, what your weather is like. You know, the Northeast comes with its unique challenges. The Pacific Northwest comes with its unique challenges. For us here, it's things like downy mildew, which really occurs everywhere. It's really like the bane of growing hops. Your biggest, the worst thing that can happen to you is downy mildew. And you know that's a thing here, but certain varieties are more resistant than others. So you know, a lot of it is trial and error, and you know we look into the stats and what the hop is about. You know, you don't want to get downy mildew in your yard, and it's something you have to battle. And then for us, I mean everybody has that. The one thing that we have the Pacific Northwest doesn't is Japanese beetles, but we deal with them too. And then now the spotted lantern fly is becoming a big thing. A lot of warnings about that. That's a newer bug in this area. We don't have them on our farm yet. They're within 20 miles of here.
So I guess kind of sticking with the idea of like dealing with hardship and whatnot, do you have any harsh regulations or barriers to entry that you've had to deal with?
I don't think so. I think it's just, you know, putting in a hop yard, that's enough of a barrier of entry itself. You know, it's not like we go and grow, you know, dig some holes and put some plants in. You're putting telephone pole sized logs into your yard, and you're running steel cable through it, planting
over hundreds miles of cable per acre, up to 2 miles of cable,
and you're running that, you know, you're getting that all set up. And then hops are fickle plants. You know, they're hard to deal with sometimes. Sometimes it's like, I don't know what's going to happen with these. They're not growing. And then you look overnight, they explode. You know, also weeds. Weeds are terrible to deal with. They just like, it's fine. Everything looks great. The field looks beautiful. And then it rains. That first big rain, Andrew will go outside and there's just weeds everywhere. So now it's time to go pull weeds and deal with all that. But, you know, it's a challenging thing. And I don't know, Andrew, you know the challenges better than me, but.
Yeah, I know, like Victor mentioned, the weeds and everything, that's just a standard thing for hop farmers to deal with, and everybody kind of has their own way. You know, we like to do it as natural as we possibly can, but, you know, weeds are weeds, and, you know, over any farmer can tell you, your field will have something referred to as a seed bank. And your goal over the years is to get your seed bank, which is of all your weeds that have reproduced and dropped seeds in your yard. You need to get that down. And that takes years to do that. It's just a lot of farming practice and learning new techniques. Again, I had never farmed before we did this. So, you know, it's a lot of learning. It's a big struggle for everybody in this area. You know, so we kind of all share ideas on how to deal with the weeds.
Wow.
And okay. Those sort of situations.
Yeah, sounds pretty in depth, you know. I brought up Monsanto earlier because of the whole Roundup thing. Do you use Roundup at all, or is it kind of just going out there and tilling them up?
No, I, you know, that's in the hop growing community, it is used, you know, within, you know, legality. I mean, they're using it, I guess, what would be considered the proper way. You know, there's things that we have to use occasionally, but I will not ever use Roundup on my hop farm. I'm a strong believer in not using it because it does leach into your soil and it does sit there. And ultimately it does end up anything that you eat that has Roundup or glyphosate, which is the actual chemical, is probably in, there's traces amount of that in most of the beer that you drink. So no, I'm not a believer in it. It scares me just even trying to use it. They'll use it for weeds, but it'll harm your plants, and I'm not risking hurting plants. You know, use the right farming practices. It's not necessary.
Yeah, we do a lot of Anderil flame weed. So he'll go through with a torch and burn back the weeds, and that'll kill them. We also do a lot of hilling, where he'll take the tractor through, and it kicks dirt up onto the rows and will smother the weeds, but the hops are growing out, so they're fine at that point.
It's referred to as hilling. It's a technique that the Germans have used for centuries, and it's been chopped here because of the type of soil we have. So we just kind of work on the soil. I have some methods for that. We have a lot of clay, and clay is really hard to move around because it's so dense and it's heavy. But we're able to improve that with organic matter, and I could go on for days about that, but the hilling worked really well this year, and it gives your rows of plants a nice mound. They retain a little more moisture, but not too much. And we saw a substantial increase in just in how well our plants grew doing that. So yeah, that's something we're still exploring. But yeah, you get weeds and you literally just smother them with more soil. And you do that continuously throughout the growing season. And it you don't need any chemicals to do that. And it's good for your soil.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely like the sounds of that a lot better than chemicals in my beer.
Right.
Yeah. And it's an unfortunate part of, you know, of the hop world.
Yeah.
Farming in general.
Yeah. 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 And I'm not one saying you have to be organic. But there's ways to avoid, you know, using chemicals if possible.
Right.
You know, now it's hard to get rid of certain types of bugs and stuff like that, but it is what it is.
Right. So are you guys, you know, we've been following you guys on Instagram for a little while now and looking into you guys, and I love seeing the big giant bags of hops. Are you guys distributing primarily to local breweries or to home brewers, or how does that work?
So we're a combination, right? When we started the hop farm, Andrew's a big home brewer. He loves the home brew. Doesn't have as much time as he used to do it, but he loves the home brew. And we were looking at it and kind of saying, all right, the breweries have all the access to all the fresh hops, all the best hops the breweries get. And then home brewers have to order them online, or they have to go to the homebrew store. And, you know, the homebrew store has to, even the homebrew store has to kind of fight their way into getting, you know, these packages that from giant hop farms where you don't know, right, how fresh the hops are. So we thought, all right, why don't we also serve as homebrewers and say, all right, these hops were packaged from this harvest. They're fresh. They're from your backyard, you know, and you can get that. So we offer wet hops. So the whole cone.
Yeah.
Which 99% of beers are not brewed with. They're brewed with pellets. But during harvest, we offer the whole cones, very limited window though. When we pick it, you have to go home and brew with it. If you let it sit for a day, it's done. They're no good anymore. So it takes a lot of coordination. It's, you know, if we were to sell you some wet hops, you and I would be going back and forth every week. All right, I think the hops are coming this time. And you'd say, okay. And then the next week I say, maybe next week, or maybe now it's moving up because they're plants. I don't have a day where it's like, oh yeah, they're ready. It's like, they'll probably be ready this day. And
it was tough this year because we had very little rain. We were on borderline of drought going into harvest. So it was really tough. Since they got drier because of the lack of water, it seemed like they'd be ready, and then it would rain, and it's like, no, they're not quite ready. And then we did get like a couple rain showers here leading into harvest, and it kind of fixed everything. But yeah, it was, I mean, we irrigate, but you still need a good rain at least every once in a while. And we went a good month, 5 weeks without any rain. So,
yeah. But yeah, so we do a lot of homebrew work, and also breweries. Breweries, you know, that's kind of, it's a lot more, it's a lot of fun to sell to a brewery because we're craft beer fans, like you're craft beer fans. We get to peel back the curtain, though. We get to go back and hand the big bag of wet hops to the brewery, or I get to be on the phone with brewers talking about the styles they're brewing. And a lot of times I'm on the phone with them and they're like, oh, I have a great idea. We can do this, this, or this. So to me, that's exciting because I love craft beer. I'm not a brewer, but I get to be a part of it. So, and we get to taste it more readily and it gets to spread that way.
Have you guys considered kind of leveraging the hop farm to get into brewing, or is that too much to put on the plate?
You know, there's definitely been some talks. You know, we have some ideas going. You know, we have some space to do something really small in there. But as of right now, that's kind of just a work in progress.
Nice.
Makes sense.
Well, we'll be keeping our eyes open for sure. Yeah. So I guess, I mean, like, I feel like we could sit here and talk about this all day because I'm thoroughly enjoying learning more about the hops. But, you know, coming off of that last piece there, how can people find you guys and where can they go to get some wet hops or pellets of their own from your farm?
So we're very active on Instagram, which is lionbinds_hopfarm. If you look at, if you're watching the live stream, you'll see my name that's there. But yeah, just Google Lion Binds. There's not many things named Lion Binds, so we're usually the first hit. We have a website, lionbindshops.com. You know, you can go learn more about us, reach out. If you're a hop farm and you're looking to have your hops processed, you can shoot us an email on there. Our web store will be online soon, so you can, you know, buy some swag, buy some hops. And yeah, we're on Facebook, Instagram, and yeah, we're very responsive.
Awesome. I can attest to that, chatting back and forth with you guys. So yeah, I mean, again, I just want to thank you guys for coming on with us. Fortunately, we get to hang out with you guys a little bit longer. We're going to talk about some UFC, which I know we're all excited about. Was happy to hear you guys are fight fans as well. So I think we're going to transition into that. But just again, once again, guys, thank you guys so much for coming on and schooling us a little bit on hops. You know, I definitely want to keep this conversation going and keep educating ourselves and our audience around all this stuff. So thank you guys for sharing that knowledge with us. But Reese, I think it's about time we transition to some UFC, sir. What do you think?
Yeah, man, let's do it. We're going to transition now. And we're back. Let's talk about some UFC shenanigans.
Yes, man. We got so much exciting stuff going on in the UFC. Some major fights coming up. And I'm so thankful that Victor's hanging out here with us again from Lion Bion's Hop Farm.
Cheers, Victor.
To talk some UFC with us. Unfortunately, we lost Andrew in the transition there. I think he may have had some technical difficulties, but yeah, we've got some big news to talk about. So I think before we jump right into talking about these big super fights that are coming up, I'm just going to run through really quick a couple of pieces of news that came about. One that I saw was that Anderson Silva, it turns out that his next fight may be his last in the UFC. So he's got a fight coming up with Uriah Hall, which I am honestly really excited about, and excited for Uriah Hall too, because I think his last two have fell through. Yeah. So that's exciting. But Anderson Silva, a legend, another legend, may retire. He's been in the UFC since 2006 and held the belt from 2006 for the middleweight division until 2013, defending the title 10 times in that time span. So I think all of us probably have fond memories of watching Anderson. fight. But you know, I think the time probably has come.
I watched that fight when he broke his leg.
Oh man.
Oh, so it, brutal.
It was, everybody was just appalled at how that looked.
Yeah. It was like a rubber band wrapping around.
So I bad.
Know, I know. Gosh. Yeah. He had a really good run, man. And, you know, even when he fights today, he still has his antics and whatnot, but you know, he's getting up there. He doesn't have that, the quickness, the agility. I think he's still got it all in the brain, right? But the body's not, not there anymore. So
it's funny though, you know, he's been around so long. You can see the influence he has on some fighters. Like you look at Adesanya.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Adesanya is just like, you know,
he's young Anderson
2.0.
Right.
Yeah. I think they fought.
Yeah. I think when they fought, he actually brought that up. He was like, I'm tired of people calling me like the next Anderson Silva. He's like, I am Stylebender. I'm not Spider, you know?
Yeah. But he did say that he's like spent his whole life watching, you know, Silva fight. Right. So he's definitely picked up on that skill set through the years just by watching him. So,
100%.
Yeah.
So yeah. Ten...
So lanky.
Right. Yeah. Right. It was a great matchup. So yeah, it's a 10 title fight or 10 defenses in his reign as the middleweight champion. There's only two other fighters that have bested that number since then, and that's John Jones and Mighty Mouse. John Jones, both of those fighters with 11 title defenses. So as we know, John Jones just vacated his light heavyweight belt, and lots of talks about moving up to heavyweight. And Dana White actually came out this week and said that when he does move up to heavyweight, he will get an immediate title shot. He's not going to have to fight his way up in that weight class, which I'm curious you guys' thoughts on that. I mean, do you think he just automatically should get a shot?
I feel bad for, you know, hopefully he doesn't do it quickly because then Francis is going to get skipped over again. He sells pay-per-views, and you know Dana's a businessman, and John has shown that he's best fighter in the world. So, I mean, how could you not?
Yeah, I mean that's pretty much what I would have said exactly. Because do you want the big money fight? I mean, honestly, if he fought Ngannou, that would probably be a huge money fight too.
I'd buy that.
I would definitely buy it. Just because I kind of want to see John Jones get knocked out because he's never been knocked out before. I like John Jones as a fighter, but I mean, I don't know. I just think it would be interesting to see that.
Ngannou's a scary, scary man.
Yeah.
When he knocked Rozenstruik out so quickly, I was just like, I was scared at home.
I know.
Yeah, so speaking of Ngannou, though, Stipe Miocic actually came out this week and said that the Ngannou fight doesn't excite him. He's not excited by that fight at all, and would rather have a new challenger come up since he's already, I think the exact quote was like, I've already put a 20-minute clinic on him or something like that. You know, he's like, essentially, I've already done that. Why do I need to do it again? But I feel like Ngannou at this point is a different fighter.
Yeah.
He's got
Ngannou was so raw when he fought Stipe the first time.
He had never faced adversity. He was just, he had one loss that whole time, but he had it in his head that he was the best and could just knock out anyone, you know? And then he had to deal. You saw him for like the half year after that. He just was a different person altogether. When he fought Derek Lewis, he was just, you know, he timid. Wasn't there. Yeah. Timid for sure.
Yeah, now he's back on a tear again. What is it, six fight win streak or something like that?
I don't know exactly, but
I can't remember the exact number. But yeah, I feel like you said, Victor, Ngannou should get the shot before anyone else at this point. Like he's just been on such a tear that he deserves it. But yeah, I think John Jones being thrown into the heavyweight mix makes things a lot more interesting. But I think that's all the kind of like headlines that I saw this week. So I definitely want to talk about some of the major fights coming up. I think the first one we have is Woodley versus Covington, right?
Yeah. So Woodley versus Covington has been in the makings for like a long time now, right? And when Woodley had the belt, Covington was coming out and talking all this mess, talking about his sister and like saying all this stuff. Like, and Woodley was like fuming. He wanted to kill this guy. And I think that there was like a contract out there. There was some, something just never happened. So Victor, I kind of just wanted to get your thoughts. Like, how, what do you think about all this?
I think, you know, it's a lot of the gamesmanship of the UFC, especially someone like Colby. Colby's always running his mouth. And Woodley's been kind of down lately. You know, he, you know, Usman, you know, tore him up, and then Woodley fought. Who did he just fight?
Gilbert Burns.
Yeah, Gilbert Burns.
He made Woodley like he didn't know what he was doing.
Just right. Gilbert Burns
beat him bad.
Yeah.
You know, Colby is such a great wrestler, and he really went the distance with Usman. Usman knocked him out at the very end, but you know, that was a knockdown, drag down brawl.
Yeah.
And I think Usman would take care of Gilbert Burns no problem right now.
Right.
So I think, you know, Colby is definitely going to take care of Woodley no problem.
I think that's where I'm at too. Woodley's only ever had that right hand, basically. He's got to catch you with that right hand to knock you out, or he's not going to win, it seems like.
And Colby's fresh. He hasn't fought since Usman.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Tyron Woodley. It's just like the lights are on, but no one's home. He's just like in there. He doesn't know what to do. He's like, you know what it reminds me of? It's like Space Jam. You guys know Space Jam, right?
Yeah.
It's like when all the athletes, the NBA players, get their soul taken, and they like don't even remember how to like shoot a free throw or something. That's what Tyron Woodley looks like. It looks like some space creatures have come and stolen his mojo, and he just doesn't know what to do with himself.
Right.
But I mean, I feel bad because he definitely, I mean, he also had a great title run, you know, as well. But I mean, I don't feel bad. That's the wrong terms. But Colby, again, obviously, he's the guy who's always running his mouth, even recently. So it'll be, they'll hype it up. I'm sure it'll be an exciting fight. But if Woodley doesn't make some changes in his game plan, I agree with you guys. I think Colby takes that one easily.
Yeah, my money's on Colby. I think that maybe since he cracked his jaw, that'd be like the only thing if something weird happened with that. But
just aim for the jaw.
Yeah.
So moving on from that, we've got another monster matchup in September. September 26th, Adesanya versus Paulo Costa. Man, this one's getting really hyped up. I'm getting really excited. The trailers are piecing together for this one, have me anxious already.
Have you seen the back and forth that they've been doing on social media, man? They hate each other. I'm sure it's, you know, marketing and all that, but it kind of feels like they hate each other.
Sometimes it feels different, you know, where you're like, these guys really don't like each other.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it might be the case that they really don't like each other. I mean, Paulo Costa's actually come out and said that he wants to break Adesanya's face, which coming from a guy like Paulo Costa, I would never want someone like to say that about my face. No. I'd be a little scared.
Right.
You know, he talks about how much Adesanya is just running around the cage. He's like, I'm not going to run from anything, you know? And interestingly enough, one thing I saw, I think a couple of days ago, is that Paulo is actually saying that he outmatches Adesanya from a technical standpoint, which I'm not sure I'm buying that one. Mm-hmm. You know, as accurate and slick as Adesanya is, I'm not sure he wins on that level. But Paulo is basically saying that Adesanya is already a beaten man based on just the way he's kind of acting, you know, and some of the banter he's actually engaging in, which we haven't really seen from Adesanya up to this point, it seems like. But yeah, you're right, Reese. I mean, like, some of the stuff, the back and forth between them on social media has gotten kind of weird. You know, Adesanya's talking about there's going to be a gang battle and all kinds of stuff. It's just interesting.
So I think that you could use some MMA math, but it might not be accurate here, right? If you go back and watch them both fight Romero, you could kind of use that as a guide, maybe, because Costa went after Romero and Adesanya didn't fight Romero. It was just running away from him. So I'm a little bit afraid for Adesanya, but he does do better when people chase him down. I don't think he's ever had somebody like Costa chase him down, though.
He avoided Romero the whole fight. He hid from Romero. And Romero is like, he's a great fighter when he wants to fight, but he's all over the place sometimes. And he played into Adesanya's hand. Paulo Costa is going to charge him. He's not going to sit back.
Right.
He's a scary dude.
So who do you think's taking it, man? It's tough.
Yeah, I don't know really. I mean, I want to say I think Adesanya holds it because he's going to turn it on. Like, look who he trains with. Look at his camp. His camp is full of killers. And he's going to look back at that Romero fight and be like, I can't do that again. So I think Adesanya keeps it, but it could easily be Costa at the same time.
Yeah. I think I'm gonna go with you on that, actually. I like Adesanya's character. Costa is just kind of, I don't know. He just seems like a, I don't know. I don't want to say anything mean, but I don't really like him that much. I like Adesanya. He's cool. The style bender.
Yeah.
Costa's like a Rocky villain.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point.
Drago.
I would break his face. Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with you guys too. As much as I can visualize Paulo Costa coming out, and you know, after Adesanya's kind of not gassed, I don't think he'd ever be gassed, but after he's a little bit, he's not as you know, elusive. I could see Costa coming out and landing some bombs and putting him away, but realistically, I don't think that's going to happen. I agree with you, Victor. I think Adesanya is going to turn it on, and we actually have seen Stylebender face some adversity when he fought Kelvin Gastelum, right, and got knocked down a couple times, and he kept coming back. He kept absorbing, and Kelvin Gastelum's nothing to scoff at. I mean, that guy can throw some shots too. Maybe not as much as, you know, Costa can, but you know, we definitely saw Adesanya face some adversity, and he still managed to retain that style and that accuracy throughout that fight. So yeah, if he can do the same thing against Costa, I do agree. I think he will keep that belt.
Yeah.
Adesanya versus Robert Whittaker, you know.
Oh my gosh, right.
That was a battle too.
He brought his A game, and I mean, it, you know, he just, I mean, he was like a sharpshooter, you know, against a duck just sitting in the pond, it seemed like.
Yeah.
You know, so, and Robert Whittaker was coming after him. So
yeah,
I'm thinking that's the strategy. If you come after him, then his counter striking and his striking in general is just that good.
Yep.
So that kind of brings us to the final big fight that I think is coming up. And let me take a stab at this. Sometimes I get it, sometimes I don't. Khabib Nurmagomedov. Oh, I did it. Versus Justin Gaethje. I'm actually, this is probably the one that I'm the most excited about. You know, the 155ers. Nurmagomedov, who has just never been beaten against a guy like Gaethje, who is an all-American wrestler. He's got these vicious kicks. He's got a pretty good striking game. And he's got, like, so much heart. Ah, man, this is going to be interesting.
Well, Victor, what do you think first before I give my thoughts?
Well, I will be rooting heavily for Gaethje. But if I were to bet on it, I would bet on Khabib, and I would never bet on Khabib because he's going to be like a minus 450 favorite. So it's just like, it's so hard. You know, we've seen him dismantle fighter after fighter. Conor McGregor, who was the man, he was knocking people out. Khabib made him look like nothing.
Right.
Yep.
And, you know, it's just, he's too good. His wrestling's too good. He's too focused. His father passed away. It is like, so Gaethje, really, I love Gaethje. I don't think he's got much of a shot. He's got a puncher's chance, but that's about it.
Yeah, I kind of, I mean, again, being realistic here, I agree with what you're saying. If it's a stand-up battle, I think Gaethje takes it home. I don't think it's going to be a stand-up battle, but we can't forget that Gaethje was he was a division something wrestler,
division
right?
Division one, yeah.
Yeah, division one wrestler. But interestingly enough, he's never attempted a single takedown in his entire UFC career.
Not so in the UFC, maybe, right?
Maybe, just maybe, he's just been sandbagging this whole time. And the minute he steps into the octagon with Nurmagomedov.
Good job. Nurmagomedov.
Maybe just maybe he shoots Maybe he shoots and he just catches Khabib off guard and he gets him to the ground and like imposes his will. Well, that would be amazing, right?
So I'm totally all for Gaethje. I'd even put money on it. And here's why. I first off want it to be an American held belt again. That's number one. Patriotism. America. Anyway, if you go back and watch Gaethje before he was in the UFC, he was taking people down constantly. He's wrestled against Jordan Burroughs at least twice, and Jordan Burroughs is like the best wrestler around, basically. And he does folk style wrestling, which is not normal and isn't something that I think Khabib has faced before, where it doesn't matter if you're on your back. Usually Khabib's facing guys that are more traditional style wrestlers that want to like go face down. He's a folk style wrestler, which allows him to do crazy rolls and be on his back and be comfortable on his back. So that's one thing. You know, the Division I wrestling is great. He has a kicking game that Khabib does not have, and he's dismantled other fighters with that before. You know, and his striking, I think their striking is probably, you know, fairly similar. Maybe Gaethje has the upper hand there. That all being said, I do think that Khabib is going to take him down. I think that Khabib will probably get him down at points, but I think that Gaethje's he's going to have enough heart to keep getting back up, but we'll see, I guess.
Yeah. Just depends on if Khabib gets the squeeze on him.
Yeah, these Dagestanis.
They're nasty, man.
All of them. Every one of them with the same beard.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. They all look the same. The Dagestani handcuffs with the beard. Yeah.
Nice. Well, we are running a little short on time. We've got to talk so much about hops and UFC. We do a, you know, we plug this every single week, but we do our weigh-ins episode every Tuesday. There is a fight night coming up tomorrow. Anthony Smith versus, here we go,
Alexander Rakic.
There you go. Ricky. Awesome. Always coming through with the pronunciations. I appreciate you. So I think we're going to save that until we can kind of recap that in the weigh-ins episode this Tuesday. So you guys make sure you listen out for that one. But I think we're about to transition into our tech news segment. But before we do that, Victor, I just again want to thank you, man, for coming out and hanging out with us for a little bit, talking some MMA, UFC, but of course for schooling us in some hops and talking about Lion Binds, Hop Farm. So you guys out there listening, make sure you check them out. And thanks again, Victor.
Thanks, guys. Had a great time.
Yeah, us too. Thank you, Victor. Appreciate it, guys. www.lionbindshops.com. Make sure to go check them out.
Yes, absolutely. All right, let's do some tech news.
All right, guys, be right back. All right, guys, welcome back. Man, we've had such a fun time. Let's talk about some tech.
Yes, yes, yes. It was so fun to have those guys on the show. Thank you guys again for coming out and coming out virtually and hanging out with us. Too bad we can't do it in person. Maybe one day. That's not too far away from us, so you never know. But yeah, now the time has come to talk about some tech news. I think the biggest news of the day, this is like fresh, hot, juicy news right here.
Right.
We got some updates to Elon Musk's Neuralink. Some really interesting stuff.
So guys, I watched this live. You could see it on YouTube. We got the link that we can share with you. But 6 p.m. Couple hours ago, if you guys didn't catch it, I did, and I can give you all the juicy details. Are you ready? I hope you are. Here they are. So ready. Very, very cool. So to basically start it off, he just kind of explained how it works, what it looks like, how it's going to be placed into your brain. So, you know, they showed some of the older images, and then they showed the more recent image of what it is. So, you know, just to describe it for you listeners out there, just imagine like a quarter-sized little coin, right? Basically, that's maybe like maybe not even a centimeter thick, right? They remove that size from your skull, basically, and they implant this little quarter-sized implant into your skull that has, like, I think it's got over 1,000 little nodes, basically, that stick into your brain, okay? And then, you know, you can't see it, basically. Once they put it in, they put everything back over your hair, your skin, all that stuff. So you won't be able to see it. And it's installed by a robot, basically. A very fine-tuned robot that takes these little threads and it looks for where the veins and the blood is in your brain, and it avoids those. And it puts these little threads into your brain. So there's no blood involved in this process, except for when they cut your skin and peel it back. There's, like, that's the only part that's actually blood. Like, it doesn't deal damage to your brain, which is very interesting. And they showed, you know, a recording of how that was doing. And there was no blood when they were puncturing the brain with these things. So they put these little... Yeah, it's crazy, right? You know, so the surgery... And here's something even crazier. The surgery only takes an hour. And they don't have to use anesthesia. Because you can't feel it. Right? There's no pain receptors in your brain. So you can't feel it. Right? So, like, they just use local anesthesia. They don't have to put you out. They put local anesthesia so you can't feel them cutting into your scalp, I guess. Sorry for the gruesomeness. I guess I should have said warning, but you're already this far, so you might as well keep going or just turn it off. But anyway, it only takes an hour, and you don't have to be like an inpatient. You can just leave the same day. So they have been doing testing on these with pigs, and the reason why they chose pigs is because pigs actually have very similar skull structures to humans, very similar brain makeups to humans, and in some ways they have, like, kind of similar, like, behaviors and whatnot to humans. So very easy test subjects to use these on. So they installed these into pigs and basically demonstrated, you couldn't see it installed on the pig, and the pigs were normal. This one pig had it in his head for 2 months already. They put it in one pig. They removed it from that pig. That pig was fine. Basically, they were just showing that these pigs are fine. Like, there's, like, no harm. No harm to these pigs. They went on to explain what the material is made out of, the insulation of it, how they prevented it from, you know, degrading while it's implanted. You know, the fact that it's easy to be removed is a big point because you could get upgrades. And it's simple, basically. So this is, like, next level, man. This is insane. But they went on to demonstrate it actually showing what the pig was doing. So this live pig, it was a live demonstration. Every time the pig would touch something with its nose, you would see spikes on the screen, which indicated it had 1,024 channels, right? And so every time one of those channels would pick up on one of those electrodes would pick up on a neuron firing, it would trigger on the screen. And so you would see it live. Every time a lot of those neurons would fire, it would spike. And that would coincide with the pig either touching food with its snout or touching something with its snout, you know, which was basically how it was a proof of concept. They also went on and said that they had been able to use this technology to predict position of limbs, of the pig's limbs, basically. So they could tell based on what the device was reading off to them where the pig's limbs were, which is crucial if you're going to get to a point where you can fix, you know, quadriplegics or whatnot. A couple other things, guys. I know I'm kind of bouncing all over the place. It was a lot of information to tech, and I definitely recommend you go and watch it yourself. It's going to be able to, he explained it very simply as, like, a Fitbit just on, like, superpowers. Right. And it would be able to connect to your phone, to an app on your phone, and you would be able to get live data at some point. Gosh, really crazy.
And what if at the end of the presentation, he was like, you can track your steps every day with this Neuralink. Just like, oh my God.
Dude, they said a lot of things. They said a lot of things that this could potentially lead to. Certainly hearing loss, eyesight, quadriplegics, you know, things like that. But they also were like, I mean, video games, come on now. Eventually somebody's going to do it. They were like, yeah, I mean, someday it's going to be a thing and this will get you there. So I was like, oh my God, geez. Okay. StarCraft for the brain. Anyway. So, one of the most important things is that they received an FDA, approval, a breakthrough with the FDA in July so that they could continue moving forward. So that's huge. I kind of butchered it, guys. I feel like I gave you the important stuff, but I totally recommend you go watch it as well. I think it's only about 40 minutes long. The first half is the presentation. The second half is the Q&A, where you get the gritty details of how the device was made, what it's composed of, and all of that. So, AJ, that all being said, man, I spoke a lot just now. What do you think about that?
I'm a little bit, like, amazed and also terrified of, like, the world that we're on the brink of entering.
Yeah.
You know, like, this sort of a keynote, I mean, I'm sure I need to watch the whole video myself, but, I mean, based on what you're describing and based on what I've watched myself, you know, obviously they're touching on the medical aspects of it, but mentioning video games, even just mentioning that, you know, it just seems like this is an advertisement for, especially when you said you can upgrade the device. It's like, okay, so it's almost being advertised as like a consumer good. It's like a consumer piece of technology. Like one day you're going to walk into Best Buy and there's going to be a Neuralink section and you're like, do you want the 2.0, the 3.0? Do you want the, you know, 256 gig model or the 2 terabyte model? You want the GPS tracking, you know, or what do you want?
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seems kind of crazy.
And he's trying to get it down to so that it's only in the thousands of dollars rather than the tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars. So right. That's consumer level, you know?
Exactly. Like if that's what he's going for, that level of affordability, plus some of the things we're talking about here, it seems like it's going more so after, maybe not more so after, but equally as after the consumer market as it is the medical, you know, space. I don't know. It's just kind of crazy. It's a little bit concerning that eventually some people may be walking around with these brain enhancement tools. I don't know.
I could see your point, and I don't want to lead you in the wrong direction. I definitely think you should go watch it because basically he made sure to point out that this wasn't a marketing thing. This was, they wanted to do this so that they could attract employees. They're trying to hire people because they only have about 100 people and he wants to get it to like more than 10,000 people. It's like, gotcha. it's in its infancy. So like most of the time he was saying, and if you guys want to be involved with this, send us your resume because we need people to help us get us to the next level. Cause you know, for it to show you a pig snout touching food,
right,
to playing video games, there's a big gap there that, you know, they would have to fill. But it's a scary gap because he mentioned recording memories or telepathy, right? That's
so dystopian.
That is, man. It is. That's weird.
But also, if I was a family member, unfortunately, I'm not a family member of anyone who suffers, you know, or is a quadriplegic or anything of that nature, deaf, you know, hearing, loss of hearing or sight, things like that. But if I were a family member of somebody like that, or was myself in that sort of situation, I feel like this would give me a little bit of hope. So I'm interested in seeing how they progress from here.
Yeah, imagine uploading your memories into a robot.
That's a scary, scary thought.
It's weird. Weird, man.
Yeah, it's very weird.
I got one more bit of information. I'm just going to run right through it, guys. We've been going for quite a long time tonight. If you're still there, thank you for sticking with us. Facebook Horizon for Oculus Quest and Rift. We have a link for you to sign up for the beta, which Facebook says will be getting opening in the coming weeks. So, guys, go ahead and click that link that we'll share with you in the description. If you want to go sign up for that, you can find it also www.oculus.com/Facebook-Horizon/sign-up. If you want to go find that yourself. So what is Horizon? It offers a space for users to hang out, play together, and create together. It's organized in discrete rooms called worlds, which can support 8 players. It allows for real-time collaboration, so you can create worlds together with other people live, basically using handcrafted 3D models and some basic scripting. Allows you to create those worlds. You can even create some mini games with the basic scripting, so that's kind of cool. And finally, users on Quest and Rift can be in the same room together and create together. So it's cross compatibility on the different Facebook products. That's all I had. Really exciting. I can't wait for it to come up. I signed up for the beta. What do you think about it, AJ?
Yeah, sounds interesting. I think collaboration in VR is where we're headed, so that's pretty cool to see people modeling. I did see something interesting, or hear something interesting, about Oculus/Facebook today on another podcast that I listened to, that Oculus Connect, which is their, you know, in-person event, which is kind of targeted towards developers, has already been announced that it's going to be held virtually this year, but has been renamed Facebook Connect. So, you know, just a little piece of information there that seems like Facebook may be taking over a little bit more of that branding. Obviously, they own Oculus, but it's going to be kind of weird to see the Oculus branding go away. Hopefully, we're not in the path of one day having Facebook VR versus Oculus, you know, Rift. So hopefully we get to see that brand stick around a little bit longer. But
yeah, I feel like you're right, though. That's probably what's going to happen. I also saw that Apple came out with some patents on some VR technology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't really speak on it. I just know that I saw it, and I don't think that they're really getting into that game, but they kind of got their hand in the pot now.
Yeah, I think there was actually even an acquisition of a company who was involved with either VR or AR. So lots of people speculating, man. A lot of people in the tech industry, press and things like that, are speculating that Apple's not far off. You know, there's been rumors for a while. Apple Glass, we talked about it on a really early episode of the podcast. We could be getting closer.
Yeah, we could. All right, man. I think that I just want to say, everybody that's watching the show, thank you guys so much for checking us out. I'm just going to say right now, we're not going to go into a gaming section, and we're not going to go into any shout outs. We kind of did our shout outs with Lionbinds, Hot Farm. Shout out to them again. Definitely. Yes. Not a lot of video game news for us to share right now. Make sure that you go check out Epic Game Store. As always, they got the free games this week. Hitman and Shadowrun, that's all I'm going to say. Go check it out. you know, anything else, AJ?
No, I just, yeah, like you said, thank you guys for being here. We're so glad you stuck around this long, and hopefully you guys enjoyed that interview with Victor and Andrew, enjoyed the beers that we had to drink this week. Thank you again to Farmhouse for the early access to the Ric Flair Goza. So delicious, and I'm not sure how much longer those three others will last in the refrigerator because it was very tasty. But yeah, so like you said at the top of the show, man, please do subscribe on your favorite podcast app, share with a friend, let people know about our show. If you know somebody who's into UFC or craft beer or things like that, let them know. Send them our way. And yeah, I guess until the next time, we'll see you guys then.
Until next time, guys. Have a good one. Peace.
See ya.